fighting for America.
Unless we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place. Remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
Fighting for Idaho.
Who decides when a law-abiding citizen is trained enough to defend themselves? And I don't think any of us, whether that's the legislators, the sheriffs, other citizens, have the right to tell someone when they are qualified to defend their life.
Fighting for you.
The pipeline is the way that they carry the product from the wells.
I know what a pipeline is, but okay.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the Morning. Thank you all for joining us. Speaking of joining us, Tom Fenton joining us from Judicial Watch. Always good to have him on. Tom, good morning.
Kevin, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, thank you for all the great work that y'all do in a nonpartisan way. If it weren't for the great work that you and others at Judicial Watch have done over the years, we wouldn't know really what's going on with our government, because Democrats or Republicans, Tom, they have they claim transparency, but that's not what they practice.
No, it's hard to get the government to tell you what it's up to, and we've had to sue over the administration over 200 times just to get access to information that they're supposed to give us under law. Most of the time, we just sue to get an answer. We're not even necessarily fighting over documents that are withheld and battling over the particular aspects of secrecy. They're supposed to respond within a month or so, and usually we wait a few months and just have to sue just to get them to tell us what they have or what they're not giving us.
Well, and Tom, that's why it's always important to support Judicial Watch. JudicialWatch.org. I've been a fan of yours and the group for many, many years, because it's not easy in the world that we live in. If it weren't for watchdogs like yourselves that are leading the way, that have led to actually leading Congress down the path, as you've said, this stuff wouldn't be covered.
It wouldn't, and Congress has, even if they were diligent, I don't think they're as diligent as they should be, but they do issue subpoenas. I know members on the Hill of both parties are interested to find out what's going on, but subpoenas are often ignored or they're negotiable in terms of the response or the timing, and delays are interminable. In one case, they had to put the Attorney General in contempt just to get compliance, which is still not really forthcoming. But Judicial Watch is able to go to court under the Freedom of Information Act, which is all about getting documents. And the administration can't do the games it is able to do with Congress, and as a result, we get documents that Congress is aghast, but not because of the fact that we got them, but the fact that we got them and they're unable to. And it really is screwed up. But that's up to Congress to fix. In the meantime, we're leading them, and we're leading the media, which is asleep at the wheel or is too often a lapdog for the Obama administration and big government in general. When you got a bunch of liberals in your newspaper or media operation, they don't think to ask the type of questions that skeptics of big government and Judicial Watch think to ask.
Well, and Tom, if you could you expand on the danger in that to our republic, that we have a media that is not a vanguard of truth in holding government accountability? What are the consequences of that?
Well, the consequences are we don't have accountable government. We don't know what the government's up to. And so when we have a media that isn't really reporting the truth or interested in much of the detail about what government is up to, when we have a Congress that comes to town and in the case of the last Congress, literally wrote a check for $1 trillion+ with its eyes closed, and then the agencies, as I described, aren't complying with the law. And then you have President Obama thinking that he can amend the law without having to go through the legislative requirements that the Constitution has, like a dictator can. You know, you may vote and you may have campaigns and elections, but that is an accountable government. If Washington operates in a way that no one knows what anyone's doing and no one's accountable to any regular legal system, let alone the people. And then the media, not all the media, the media is much bigger than it used to be in a good way. There's a real problem of self-government. It's more than about disagreeing with the president's policies and getting tired of Congress bickering. It's about whether or not we know and have any control as a voter and a citizen over what Washington is doing. And I would suggest that through Judicial Watch, you have more control than you would otherwise, because it's that Freedom of Information Act law that allows us to kind of bring government back to earth and under control, because Congress ain't doing it, and the media too often is failing and is would rather just issue a rewrite a press release from the administration than do any serious investigative reporting.
Judicial Watch President Tom Vinton with us, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Corruption Chronicles, and executive producer of the documentary District of Corruption here at 580 KIDO. Let's take a look at some of the Freedom of Information Act requests that Judicial Watch has filed here, Tom. One dealing with Idaho's own Bo Bergdahl.
Yes. What is going on with him? Why hasn't the Justice Department, the Defense Department, proceeded and figured out whether to charge him with desertion? Obviously, they've had the facts essentially since he, by all accounts, did desert his post. But on top of that, the administration released five top Taliban leader terrorists in exchange for this guy. And that was prohibited by law. And obviously, it put at risk our national security, because at least one of them is, calling his buddies again in the Taliban. And we want to know what went on there. We're asking specifically about any deals made with Qatar, the regime in the Middle East that is our ally, but with allies like that, who needs enemies? And also the concern is that the law requiring that the Defense Department, specifically the Secretary of Defense, in that case Senator Hagel, determine that there'd be no threat to national security if these people are released. We want to know where's that determination? Tell us how you came up with that. And they've refused to give us much, if anything. And we now have four lawsuits trying to get to the heart of this real many. And I think I speak for many in the military. I'm not a veteran, but following the story closely, this treachery that occurred with the release of these terrorists for Bo Bergdahl. And the fact that they still haven't concluded whether to charge him with desertion is a real indication that you may have some more politicians than military folks who ought to be concerned more about military order and discipline, and frankly, the safety and vindicating those who died searching for him, which reports are at least six people died looking for him, and other operations throughout that part of Afghanistan ground to a halt, and the Taliban really got a leg up because of the immediate efforts of the military to try to find where he was. And they're still trying to figure out whether he deserted or not. How many people do you need to question to figure that out? How big was his platoon? How many people were in his chain of command? The corruption in the Obama administration. Everyone likes to think, well, President Obama, we don't like what he does. Well, when you have the president not willing to follow the law, attorney general not willing to follow the law, that affects other agencies, and I can tell you it affects the Pentagon and people that you Americans typically rely on, which are the senior leaders of our military, and they can play politics as much as a U.S. senator can.
Well, and Tom Vinton with us, Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org, Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO. It would be nice to know what the thinking went into the negotiating with the Bergdahl release and these five detainees that, as you said, one of them is trying to get the band back together.
Yeah, they are calling Taliban associates in Afghanistan. And the administration, I think the administration's analysis is, well, they still are threats to national security, but we can mitigate the threat. Is that reassuring to you? It's not reassuring to me. It's the type of thing that ought to have people really upset. And I think Between this and the release of the Gitmo prisoners, that there's the mass jailbreak that Obama's leading on behalf of Gitmo terrorists, sending them back home or to places where they're likely to engage in terrorism again. Plus, you kind of see this even in the culture with the overwhelming positive reaction to the American Sniper movie. I think there's a real grass fire about this issue and about breaking faith with our military, breaking faith with the American people. You know, the president is commander in chief. In the least, you know, fight over taxes, but in the least, we shouldn't be fighting over or having to worry about whether or not he's protecting the homeland. And when he's releasing terrorists, he is not only not protecting the homeland, he's putting it in danger. And that I think people are much more sensitive to and are alert for these days than I think most of Washington is. And I don't know what your view is from the feedback you get from your listeners and your community in Idaho, but people are mighty sensitive to it. That's the feeling I'm getting.
Tom, two more questions for you. Before we get to Benghazi, you and Senator Crapo have been working diligently. You've come out here and met with Senator Crapo concerning, you know, just how much information that these big companies get when we're talking about consuming, you know, consumer stuff. You would think that we'd have a right to privacy, but you in the past, along with Senator Crapo, have been raising awareness that, you know, a lot of our information isn't private.
Well, that's true, and this, there's a new regulator, thanks to Obama, called the Consumer Financial Protection Board, and I think that's the name of it. And I sometimes get lost in all these Washington acronyms. And this big agency, Elizabeth Warren, who's the populist slash socialist senator from Massachusetts, that was her idea, so that gives you an idea of what they're into. They think in order to help consumers, they need every fact that they can get about consumers. So this government agency, without your permission, and arguably without authorization under law, is going to credit agencies and credit card bureaus and credit card agencies and credit bureaus and obtaining credit card transaction data and credit report data. And I don't know if any of your listeners have examined their credit reports, but it is the keys to their figuring out what they're up to financially and all sorts of other secrets about their personal private finances. And this data is being swept up in mass quantities by the millions by this government agency just so they can better regulate us. And if you think your private data is secure there, well, then I have a credit card to Target I can give to you. This is a real risk to our privacy. It's arguably a violation of our privacy and a violation of law. And, you know, again, the leftist media likes to focus on the NSA, and there's a lot to focus on there where they're taking data about phone calls that people think they should not be. But in terms of, like, the real impact on your security, your privacy, the government stealing and taking financial data without justification about your credit card transactions. Someone in the government has access to your credit card transactions, and they tell us, by the way, it's been anonymized. No one can figure out tie the transactions to someone personally, and we all know that's bunk, and you don't need to be a computer expert to know that's bunk, but this is what's happening in Washington, and, you know, compare and contrast that to reports you see from the big three networks about what's happening in Washington. You know, they pretend it's normal here, and in my view, it's a rule of law crisis that really is putting our republic at risk in many fundamental ways.
Tom, final thoughts about Benghazi. Are we ever really going to learn the truth? You guys are out there at Judicial Watch, judicialwatch.org, to make sure that we get to the truth eventually.
Well, I think because of our work, and there have been some good reporting on this by Fox News and others, that we do know much of the truth about Benghazi, but the key aspects of it, unbelievably, we don't know. Like how the ambassador died, where he died, who killed him. What was the reason for the attack? What was behind it? What were the operations of the United States there? Why were no military assets of significance deployed to try to rescue not only those who were under attack, but those who could come under attack? Why the president and who was behind and who decided to to start the campaign of lies, blaming this on a spontaneous demonstration and an internet video that no one saw, when in fact they had drones overhead showing what was happening in real time. They saw no demonstration. We have the document showing that there was an attack, not a demonstration. And we know the White House, not Intel officials, were behind the false talking points that Susan Rice, of course Hillary Clinton was echoing these issues, saying that it was a demonstration and not a Al-Qaeda attack. And we're in court with multiple lawsuits trying to get access to this information. We got, again, access to Congress couldn't. Our information actually caused Speaker Boehner to support finally a select committee to look into Benghazi, a super committee. But they just had a hearing, Kevin, a few weeks ago, I think it was the week before last, and we talked about it, where the hearing was about how the Senate, the State Department, and the administration are not cooperating with their committee. This is more of the same, and we have to think of ways as citizens, and I think Congress needs to be more creative and more direct, to put it charitably, in holding this administration to account. You know, when you're spending money in violation of the law, like they're doing with Obamacare, with amnesty, and in the case of Bergdahl, they released people in absolute violation of the law, there are criminal consequences to that, in the least. And it certainly ought to constitute firing offenses. And when you obstruct a congressional investigation, the documents we received about Benghazi had not been turned over to Congress, and the document tied the White House to this big lie campaign that I talked about. That's obstruction of Congress. People get prosecuted for things like that. And Congress is, you know, debating whether or not to keep money away from a government agency when it's not the agency that's its issue, it's the people running it acting outside the law that's at issue. And I think one of the problems that folks have, Congress has in dealing with this issue, is that they misunderstand the problem, and that it's the fact there are people who aren't obeying the law in the administration. And if that's the case, legislation and funding fights really don't address the issue.
Tom, we appreciate it. Keep up the fight, sir.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for letting me go on a bit. And people can learn more about our work and join our movement, join our cause at judicialwatch.org.
Have a good day.
Thank you, sir.
Our great friend Tom Fenton joining us from Judicial Watch. Benghazi is not over. Despite the spin from the press, laws were broken, lives lost. Shouldn't we know what happened? Shouldn't we be holding these folks accountable?
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
All right, let's get to some issues here. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. The president declared that ISIS is the equivalent of what happened with the Christians in the Crusades.
And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
Forget somebody's political background. Does this guy love America? We go to James in Star with Kevin Miller at 580 KIDO. It's been a while, Jimmy.
Hey, that's okay, LL.
LL.
LL, that's the code for Linda Lover.
Oh.
Hey, it sounds like you and I got the same little mess that's going around in the air, huh?
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Oh, man, there's nothing more I hate than being sick, but I had to call in, Kevin. I mean, I can't believe it, but I totally believe it. When you were playing the clips, the sound bites of our current president and how he was comparing ISIS, I just got mad, really mad, really quick. And, you know, the one thing I wanted to say, if I didn't get to say anything else, is this enough? Has he revealed enough? I mean, how much more can you say besides just saying it?
Well, and we always like you to wake up mad, so for people that missed it, let's take a listen.
Humanity has been grappling with these questions throughout human history. And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
Or my personal favorite, the American version.
In our home country, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified in the name of Christ.
Oh,
is he the president of the United States? I would expect that from somebody from the Middle East. I'd expect that from ISIS.
Kevin, please, people, anybody that's listening, you got to realize we're in a bad spot. And this guy's a bad dude, and he does not want anything else but this country turned upside down. And, you know, it's just like the Jordanian president, right? Look at what those guys are doing, man. Their guys are taking care of business, Kevin. And I know if you were running the country, that's how you would do it. I know if I was running the country, that's how I would do it. And it's so sad that we've been neutered. We're totally neutered. And thanks for doing what you do, buddy. I can't talk much more, but you keep up. Keep up the good work.
God bless, Jim. Thank you. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men,
men, men, men, manly men.
Can you believe it's 51 degrees and it's February in the Treasure Valley? 580 KIDO. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Kevin.
So here we have February in the Treasure Valley, 51 degrees.
And we always, you know, it's almost typical in February. You have 1 week that teases you to think, oh, maybe it's going to be an early spring. And then it turns nasty again. And almost, I think almost every year that happens.
Well, let's hope that it happens soon. I know there are a lot of people that want to ski, want to live the winter lifestyle.
Oh, you can ski. There's 16 inches of new snow at Brundage over the weekend.
Yeah, but still, it doesn't really feel like winter, does it?
I think it's great. I got out in the backyard and got all my grapes all pruned up, built a new arbor yesterday off the deck. It was fantastic. 60s, sunny, working out there in shirt sleeves. It was great.
Right, but still, not winter.
Nope. Happy about that. I'll keep it.
Hmm.
Keep the snow in the mountains and the nice weather in the valley. But it is going to, I mean, all this rain, it's been a lot of rain overnight. Could cause some flooding, standing water in the roadways, even, you know, like State Street. Had great big puddles on it this morning.
I was disappointed it didn't rain over the weekend like they said it was going to.
Yeah, they kind of missed that one, didn't they?
Yeah.
I wasn't disappointed at all. What do you mean you missed it? You were laying on the couch. That was you. That was your weekend, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah.
That's great.
I have Bob Costas eyes. You remember Bob Costas during the Olympics?
Wasn't that pink eye he had? Having to go home because of that?
He had bad Botox.
Oh.
It was the Botox that went bad for him, and so he had these, you know, horrendous little, you know, bloodshot eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm dealing with today, but...
Bad Botox, huh?
Yes, bad Botox.
Maybe that's what Brian Williams has.
Well, speaking of Brian Williams, you take a look at... he's decided to give himself kind of a voluntary break because he's part of the news now.
Yeah, yeah. More stories under question now. Not only the, you know, you have the New Orleans story, which they kind of tried to say, well, it could have happened over the weekend.
Right.
Where he said that out of the room, he saw bodies floating by out of his room on Bourbon Street, to which that was high ground. There wasn't very much flooding there. Not enough to float bodies.
Does beg the question, do you trust your news readers? Do you trust the people that... you know, 10 years he's been behind the desk at the anchor chair. Do you trust him?
Well, and in Brian Williams' case, he's not just a news reader. He's an executive producer.
Hmm.
So he, in part, you know, calls the shots on what goes and what doesn't go. He's just not sitting in front of the teleprompter being a good monkey. He's reading, you know, he's helping produce this. I'm going to bet he was supposed to be on Late Night with David Letterman this week. I bet he cancels that.
Well, if he doesn't, that would even be bigger, wouldn't it?
Well, there'd be a big love fest there.
Right. It would show you, though, that he doesn't really care what people think about him. And then Brian Williams was one of the first people to adopt to Facebook, to Twitter, to everything else. I'm surprised NBC hasn't made fun of him on SNL like they do everybody else.
It is kind of interesting, isn't it? I mean, they blast everyone. You'd think they'd be all over that. There's some story now about maybe he didn't. I can't even remember what it was about rescuing a dog.
When he was a volunteer firefighter in New Jersey.
Yeah. Right? Now this question, was he a volunteer firefighter? Did he rescue a puppy? And you know what? I'll tell you right now, if he's lied about puppies, America will cry out. Never mind this whole shot down war thing. If puppies are involved, he's in trouble.
Well, here's the other thing, though, with Brian Williams. Apparently, it had been a problem with NBC for quite some time, and they kept saying, look, we've got a problem with this guy who continues to make things up. And he was warned. They talked to him about it, and he kept on with the shenanigans.
Hmm.
I mean, in our lives, though, and we're a very forgiving people, we, you know, how many times have we gotten away with something?
You and me?
You know what I'm
dozens,
you
mean,
dozens. Well, you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
You know, and sometimes when we don't get away with things and then we see other people do it, we, you know, well, why doesn't, you know, what happens to us happen to them? Why aren't they held accountable? They should be held accountable. And, you know, you take a look at Brian Williams. I mean, how does he recover from this? NBC has just signed him to a $10 million a year contract. They've invested everything in him. Who do you bring in? Lester Holt? And by the way, CBS apparently has more credibility. Remember when Dan Rather did the George W. Bush hatchet job?
Yes, and made up the story about the Coast Guard and the and enlistment papers.
And then he used the CBS Evening News to continue his story even when it was disproven.
Yeah.
Well, CBS, to their credit, of course, I think they just wanted Rather out, brought in an outside investigative team. NBC is going to investigate themselves.
And Brian's going to take a break.
Who's going to be it? That creepy guy from Dateline that goes, you know, and we all know how the story ends.
Oh, maybe he'll jump out and surprise somebody. He'll set up a thing where you get to rescue a dog and put Brian Williams there and see whether he rescues him or not.
Or to catch a predator.
Yes, and then he'll jump out and say, oh, well.
To catch Brian Williams.
Guess what, Brian Williams? We're with NBC News. Yeah. That'd be good.
Well, the Grammys last night.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Smith doing well. Are you a big Sam Smith guy?
Eh, what? Yeah, he's all right.
Well, he beat out everybody.
Yeah, he's all right.
Everybody says, well, you know, I love that guy, but you look at him and he just doesn't sound how he looks. What does that mean?
Neither did Paul Harvey.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
Here's a little from the Grammys last night if you missed it. Oh, let's try this.
Sam Smith. Won't you stay with me?
'Cause you're all I need. Hmm.
So he doesn't sound like he's supposed to, like he looks? What are they saying?
Exactly. 'Cause he's got that soul vibe, if you will.
Is he too pasty?
People have said that.
Well, I guess, you know, if you played them and asked, what race is this artist, they probably couldn't tell you. But isn't that the way it should be?
I really think, you know, judge it by the sound of his voice. But that and a lot of the old people did really well last night on the Grammys.
Mm-hmm. Madonna, huh? How about that? Did you see the pictures of Madonna?
I actually saw Madonna perform live there, and I'm going, eh.
She wore this Matador outfit?
Is she, like, what, 54 now?
I think she's older than that, maybe. I'm not sure, but she wore this, and it had no rear end in it.
How exciting.
I think maybe she should have won a SAG award. I'm just wondering.
Now, that was pretty good. That was pretty good.
They gave the SAGs out last week, was it?
Birdman did very well there.
Huh? Birdman.
Yeah, you know, the Michael Keaton movie?
Oh, yes. But yeah. Yeah, Madonna, stop. Stop, Madonna. You're embarrassing yourself.
Apparently, she didn't kiss a girl this time.
Nope.
I guess that fad's kind of gone out of the way.
Everyone's done that. Everyone's kissed a girl now.
Everybody's kissed a girl.
I know I have.
Even the girls have kissed girls. Sure. Yes, yes. So.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that going on. Brian Williams, we've got the Grammys. I'm sure you want to talk about the basketball team.
Yeah, Dean Smith passing away. Is that the basketball team you're talking about?
Fair enough. We'll go with that.
Yeah, North Carolina coach. Guy's a legend. You know, Michael Johnson, Byron Scott. There's a lot of...
Michael Jordan.
What'd I say? Michael Johnson. No, I'm sorry.
It happens sometimes.
Yeah,
I
Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of big names who came out under his tutoring.
Mm-hmm.
And like Michael Jordan made the comment over the weekend that other than his parents influenced his life more than anyone.
Well, I'll tell you, having worked Carolina and have been a Carolina fan there, and, you know, I think Michael Jordan never played at the Dean Dome. He played at a place called Carmichael Auditorium, I think. Carmichael
Arena, isn't it?
Arena, maybe.
Yeah.
In Chapel Hill. And having gone to the Dean Dome, there is a certain mystique about the Carolina way, and whether it's Michael Jordan or James Worthy or Brad Daugherty or any of those teams, and it really comes down to Coach Smith. And I had a chance to interview Coach Smith many years ago when he wrote one of his books on leadership. And Coach Smith, by the way, a lot of people don't know, he was a very, how should I say this? He wasn't a Republican, let's just say that. He was big into the John Edwards campaign, but a beloved guy. The players loved him, but he was very much in the Democratic Party. He did a lot for John Edwards when John Edwards was something. And you know, you go to Chapel Hill, and it's all powder puff blue.
Yes, it is.
And
one of the first sports programs that really sported baby blue with pride.
Right. And, you know, you go down to this place called Franklin Street, and there's an old-time burger shop where all the players still go, and they have pictures there, and of Coach Smith. It's strange. I can't really define the Carolina way. But you take a look at the impact he had on the game. And in this age of cynicism, you hear the players talk about, well, he cared for me more as a person than as a player. And that's tough to think about these days when it's one and done. Or, you know, you have these guys that coaches that make a lot of money and the players that don't in college basketball and college football for that matter. But they believed, and I believe them, that Dean Smith cared for them more as players, or I'm sorry, more as people than players.
Yeah, I would say Dean Smith is in that group of two or three college sports coaches. And there's another one that Dean Smith I would clump in college basketball with, and that would be John Wooden, of being all about the players and caring about the program.
Although Dean Smith never really won hardly near as many as John Wooden did.
No.
You remember his big win over Georgetown and you know, the last win that he had, and he was almost embarrassed, I guess, to get the attention. The only time that he got the attention, apparently, was when they lost. When they won, it was all about the seniors, and it's kind of unique. I was, you know, monitoring it, because I, you know, even though I'm sick, I do listen to the radio and such, and they were talking about the story that when you went to Carolina, Matt Daugherty, who failed as a Carolina coach, was a pretty good player there, not Brad Daugherty, Matt, who... The big thing is you'd have these McDonald's All-Americans and you'd have to earn your way on the team. Like the seniors and the juniors would have their names on the back, but not the freshmen. And you worked your way from the blue team to the white team.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal.
Yep. He's a coaching legend and something that coaches should model themselves after, in my opinion.
I don't know if you could do that these days with the kids that you have today.
A little bit different, but speaking just about out of time of basketball, Boise State, huge win over San Diego, packed house at Taco Bell Arena yesterday. That was a great game.
Yeah.
Big win, great game. They're half a game behind San Diego State and, Wyoming.
Yeah, I know you and I disagree on this. I just don't see the rub for basketball, and I know you've told me many years ago before the football program was anywhere near that it is today that basketball was the big deal here.
Charged atmosphere there is today. It was awesome.
But, I mean, you go back to that. I mean, is that really possible. If they win the Mountain West, how much of a rub will they get here locally, do you think?
I think it's pretty good. I mean, just based on the crowd yesterday, based on the atmosphere at the game, it was of days of old, and the team did not let down. They spanked San Diego State.
Right, but now you're not the most objective person either when it comes to Boise State.
What do you want me to say? It was horrible that 11,000 people jammed in there? That it was awful?
I'm just
that
saying that's the first time 11,000 have been there for how many years?
Been a couple of years.
Since the Graham era.
No. I don't know why you keep on that.
He was just a nice guy, man. He was just a nice dude. I don't know why I like Greg Graham. He's an assistant at Wazoo now, but I love that guy.
Yeah. Well, he was.
Leon
Rice, nice
to his credit, works very hard, ingratiated himself into the community, had a chance to leave and didn't.
Yep. So. And is committed to the program, so got to give him kudos there, and a big win yesterday for him at Taco Bell Arena. So that's what we know, and you're gonna make it through the day okay?
Look, I'm one and done here.
Okay, Mr. Kentucky. Traffic now is coming out of Cannon County. And